Hello, everybody. Recording live from somewhere.
What's good, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki, and we have a ton to get to. I don't even know if we're going to have time to break down what happened on the ice this past weekend, because the move that so many of you either feared or didn't want to happen, it finally went down. The end of the Patrick Laine era in Winnipeg is now complete. So we're going to break it all down in just a second here, but we got to get to this right off the bat, because the big news in the sporting world is the Super Bowl 55 matchup is all set. That's right, Pigskin fans. The moment you've waited for is finally here. And DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of Super Bowl 55, is bringing back their golden ticket giveaway with up to 55 mil in prizes up for grabs. Now, all you have to do to get your share of these huge prizes is enter DraftKings free Super Bowl prediction challenge. Once you submit those picks, you will get a free instant prize up to $25,000. So you don't even need any skill. You just got to hit submit, essentially, and who knows how much money you might be pulling in. And if you also now have the most predictions correct, you could win the top prize of $1 million. Download the app now. Again, enter the free prediction challenge. Answer simple questions like who will score last, and boom, make it rain. Let the money flow down on top of you. DraftKings has also paid out $7 billion plus to its players since 2012, so they know a thing or two about big paydays. So again, download the DraftKings app now and use promo code THPN to enter the free $55 million Super Bowl prediction challenge. Everyone gets an instant prize up to $25,000 just for playing. Use promo code, again, THPN now, and enter the free $55 million Super Bowl challenge. Only at DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of Super Bowl 55. Terms, conditions, and eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. So make sure you check that out. I was in the DraftKings $1 million pool for conference championship weekend. Yeah, it didn't go so well. Managed to sneak into the top 170,000, so I kind of missed out on making a little bit of dough. But as far as the NFL could hope for, I mean, I wanted to see Rodgers Mahomes. But I think for as far as the storylines go, to have the young buck up against the old goat, it's going to be a pretty good Super Bowl. Buccaneers, Kansas City. Can't wait for that to get down. I mean, mainly for the football, but a lot of it has to be, too, with the Super Bowl feast that's going to take place on that day, too. I am like 2 weeks out already trying to figure out the menu for the game day spread, how I can go about creating something a little bit different this year. So I was actually, you know, to me, you can't have game day without wings. That's like the one mandatory ingredient, the one mandatory thing over everything else that has to be there, or it's not quite a game day feast. And I would have to say my favorite wing sauce, like, it's either going to be buffalo or something sweet and spicy. So I'm trying to think of a way to, like, zhuzh up just your regular buffalo sauce. My move has been in the past to, I guess, not confit garlic, but like cook garlic in oil until it gets nice and bubbly. And then you mix that instead of just butter in with the Tabasco hot sauce to get buffalo sauce. And it's outstanding. It's dynamite. It's super easy, too, if you want to give that a try to maybe shake up the way you do your buffalo sauce. But I want to go a step further. So I'm just wondering, you hit me up on Twitter at Brandon_Rewicki. I want to know your homemade hot sauce recipe. What's the go-to? Because the homemade hot sauce just takes things to another level. So I'm trying to figure out, should I add some fruit? What kind of sweetener should I add? I just want to go a step above. So let me know again on Twitter at Brandon_Rewicki. I want to know your hot sauce recipes, and we'll make this Super Bowl game day feast along with DraftKings something to remember. Now, this past weekend was definitely something to remember for Jets fans. I don't know if you guys were shocked, didn't think it was going to happen, what the emotions were on the deal. I thought Patrick Laine was going to get moved. I just didn't think it would be in season. I thought this was going to be something at the end of the year, before the draft, you would get a bidding war amongst different teams. And then finally the Jets would make a decision that, you know, it's best for both sides that Patrick Laine and the Winnipeg Jets mutually part ways. So there was a level of surprise to me, and it really came to a head Friday night before it became official Saturday. You know, once the big dogs, the big insiders start to say a team is the front runner in a trade, you can basically write it down in pen. This is how it's going to go down. I mean, it was just so clear on social media. The initial reaction was a combination of anger. It was pretty much mostly anger, to be honest. There was a little bit of despair and sadness, but people were just pissed off that the number two overall pick of a few years ago is gone and out the door. The guy that was supposed to be Winnipeg's superstar for 10 years, and the marriage couldn't even last five, let alone 10 years. Look, I was a little surprised at just how negative the reaction was. But then I thought, you know what? I went through a similar thing in my fandom. So I'll just kind of relay my story. And I think the way I went about the reaction to that maybe mirrors and help out a Jets fan who's still a little bit rattled about Patrick Laine heading to Columbus and Pierre-Luc Dubois coming to Winnipeg. As you may or may not know, I have been a diehard Flyers fan since birth. And just about 10, I think it might be 10 years ago right now, there was the kind of like the Red Wedding Day where Paul Holmgren said, Mike Richards, captain, see ya. Jeff Carter, best friend, 40 goal scorer, adios. And the team just, you know, basically ripped out the heart and the core all in one fell swoop completely out of nowhere. And the Jeff Carter one, it sucked, but there was a definite connection that I think all Flyers fans, myself included, had with Mike Richards. I mean, aside from the fact that he was the captain, he really was the heart and soul of that team. And he was a guy that, I mean, when you watched him, he just left every ounce on the ice. I mean, a fan favorite in the exact same way Patrick Laine was. They went about it completely different ways. But Mike Richards was supposed to be the guy that was going to bring the Cup back to Philadelphia. And now he's gone. Out of nowhere, he's just gone. And I remember when the trade happened, I was actually working. It would have been my early years in TSN 1290. I was on location. And I got the news on my phone. And I felt like throwing up. I felt like getting sick. I was like, it just gutted me right to the core. And people were like, dude, are you okay? Like, My boss was there. He's like, Brandon, do you need to go home? Like, are you sick or did something, like, is there an emergency? And I think all I could muster out at the time was, they're gone. They're gone. And it really bothered me that, you know, whether it was right or wrong at the time and moving forward here, that, man, the guys that I loved watching to play more than anybody else, they're going to be wearing a new uniform, and there's a lot of unknowns. So I could totally, you know, looking back, empathize on the situation here in Winnipeg where there's a feeling like we lost something awesome and we might never get that back. But as the days kind of passed by, you know, you slowly start to take maybe a more sober look at the trade, at what's coming back, what the team's going to look like moving forward. And I remember seeing the haul for those two trades. And then I was like, yeah, you know what? Maybe, you know, maybe you take a tiny step back, but it could be something special going on here with the construction of this team. And I thought, you know what? Richards to LA, you're getting Braden Schenn, who at the time was, you know, maybe the best prospect in hockey. Wayne Simmons is just the best. And, you know, the Couturier and the Voracek haul from Columbus. And then I thought, you know what? You're also getting this goalie from Arizona who, yeah, it's a big, long contract, but he's never had a team in front of him like this. And then Ilya Bryzgalov just blew everything to hell, and I didn't feel too good about anything for a long time. So thankfully, no Russian goalies coming over from Columbus in this one. You don't have to worry about that. You got Connor Hellebuck in the net here. I guess we have to ask ourselves this, which is the main question anytime a trade is made, especially a hockey trade, right? Like sometimes there's trades where, you know, you move a guy for futures and you know what, you're not getting better in the moment, but you're doing the best for your organization at the time. But when it's a pure hockey trade, I think we need to ask the question this. Are the Jets a better hockey team today trading Patrick Laine for Pierre-Luc Dubois? We'll get into the Roslovic thing a little bit later on. I think the answer, for me at least, swapping Patrick Laine for Pierre-Luc Dubois, I think the answer as of right now is yes. I think the Jets are a better team. And that's, and look, I was as high on Patrick Laine as any Jet fan here in the city. I still think he can be a guy that, I think he can touch 50. I don't know if he will anymore. It's not the foregone conclusion it seemed after year two, but I think the world of him, and I think he was going to have a huge, huge year in Winnipeg. And it's a shame that, you know, we didn't get to see it one last time, although that was a hell of a parting gift, his final game against the Calgary Flames popping a couple times. But there's a hard truth when it comes to building a championship roster. Like there's some commandments that it seems like you have to follow. Maybe the biggest must have more so than anything is depth down the middle, is having that 1-2 punch. Just about every single Stanley Cup team, you could do the past 20 years, the past 30, 40 years, even if you just wanted to limit it to the past 20 years. So we have something recent here. I don't know if there's a team that didn't find a way to pull that off each and every year. It's just, it seems like it's mandatory. You know, maybe the Blues to a tiny extent didn't have that, but I mean, Ryan O'Reilly won the damn Conn Smythe and Selke trophy in the same season, and they had some tremendous underrated depth behind him down the middle. But I mean, the Caps have Kuznetsov, Backstrom, the Penguins, obviously what was going on there, Chicago, LA, Pittsburgh again, Boston with Bergeron and Krejci, Detroit with Datsyuk, and I mean, Zetterberg at times played center, but you had that duo there. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. It seems like you need to have two big dogs right down the middle. And the Winnipeg Jets have that now. They have it. It cost them a pretty penny, but there's no doubting that down the middle, this is by far the deepest this organization has ever been in their existence. And that goes a long way come playoff time. It sucks, but in my opinion, it's the proper way to build a forward core. The center position is just, there's no way about it. It's way more valuable than having, you know, some proficient production out there on the wing. And so what the Jets did is, and what I thought would eventually have to come to a head, is move your position of strength for a position of weakness. I didn't think they were going to get a number one defenseman for Patrick Laine, so that option was off the table for them. So the next move was to get somebody down the middle. I just don't think it was going to be sustainable for Winnipeg to have all these wingers, two of them being poor defensively on top of it, making up, I don't know, 20, 25 mil, maybe 30 mil of the cap, right? Like, it's just, you can't pay that much to your wingers by sacrificing depth down the middle. And it sucks that Patrick Laine was the guy that had to move, but I still believe that this was a pretty good trade for both sides. So that's the composition aspect of the deal. The other thing that I think has to be taken into account before we dive into some other issues here, and we just can't ignore it, is the salary cap aspect of the situation. You know, this season, things are going to be the same, essentially. The Jets are retaining money on Laine's contract, so it's money in, money out. We can kind of look at it through that lens. But, you know, even next year, Pierre-Luc Dubois still has 1 year left on his deal at 5 mil. Patrick Laine is going to be an RFA with arbitration rights, a qualifying offer that's likely to be well over 7 million. You know, there's the potential next year that even if, whether or not Patrick Laine signs long-term in Columbus, whatever the move is, that Dubois at 5 could be as much as $4 million less than Patrick Laine at 9, $3 million less than Patrick Laine at 8. And even if you love Patrick Laine, it's kind of hard to argue, you know, would you rather have Patrick Laine at $9 million per season, or would you rather have Pierre-Luc Dubois at $5 million? And then you have an extra $3-4 million, whether you want another winger to replace Laine, or maybe you pool some of that money to get an impact defenseman, I think it's hard to say that, you know, if it's $9 million, that you can field a better team with Dubois and something else as opposed to just Laine, let alone what Laine is going to garner over the next several years. It's likely to be closer to 10 mil. I don't think we can take that out of the equation. Also, Pierre-Luc Dubois has another year of team control. So it's not the 2 years that Patrick Laine has. It's 3 years. So there's, you know, if the Jets wanted to not play hardball, but keep things short term with the flat cap, they could sign Pierre-Luc Dubois to another 3 year deal. And then they would still have him before he hits UFA. And then you make a decision on that. But there's a ton of options here as well. And there's no doubt from a salary cap perspective, I think this puts the Jets in a much cozier position. They have a lot more options at the very least. You know, we brought up an interesting thing that there were a little bit of rumors about on the big show, but there's some talk that, you know, even if Patrick Laine likes Columbus, that he's going UFA the second that he's able to, that it's going to be another 2 year contract or maybe, you know, 2 1-year contracts, whatever it is. And he's going to walk as a UFA and pick and choose where he wants to play. Like go the NBA player empowerment route. And that it was going to happen whether it was Winnipeg or Columbus or basically anywhere, that Patrick Laine is kind of set on becoming a UFA. And that's a really interesting wrinkle. And I think maybe heightens Kevin Cheveldayoff's mindset of we need to move Patrick Laine sooner than later. I don't think we can necessarily take that out of the equation when we look at this deal, that the Jets know what Patrick Laine was A, asking on a long-term deal or a longer-term deal, and B, whether or not he ultimately wanted to stay in Winnipeg. Like it's things we don't necessarily know at the moment, but I think it's fair to say that maybe there should be a bit of trust put into, you know, what the GM knows more so than any of us do. Now, we have to talk about the elephant in the room. And it came out in a piece by Mike McIntyre, the Winnipeg Free Press, a great piece, just kind of looking at what led to the dissolving of the marriage between Patrick Laine and the Winnipeg Jets. And midway through the piece, the locker room is brought up. And Mike kind of presents both sides to the story that, you know, source A says that it's Scheifele and Wheeler that are to blame and that, you know what, they were way too hard on Patrick Laine, you know, weren't welcoming to him, maybe didn't, I don't want to say coddle because that's not the right word, but, you know, just didn't go out of their way to make him feel welcome, were threatened, whatever it may be, and they made life hard on Patrick. And that ultimately led to Patrick Laine and the team deciding that it's best for us to part ways. And then there was source B who said, no, this is all on one guy and one guy alone. And that's Patrick Laine, whose lackadaisical attitude led to a rift between not only he and Scheifele and Wheeler, but a bunch of other players on the team. And eventually it was just too much and a move had to be made. Now, we don't know, and I don't know if we'll ever know which side is ultimately correct. But, you know, it's funny, in sports talk radio, either one of those, like from our perspective, is the option to go with. Either you go with that one where this guy's at fault or this guy's at fault. You want to go to one of the extremes if you can. But in reality, the truth is usually somewhere in between. It's a lot less provocative and controversial, but to me, it's generally closer to where the truth lies. And I would agree with that in this situation where, look, I don't think it's any surprise that Patrick Laine and Mark Scheifele didn't get along. I don't know if it was a matter of being threatened or just, you know, two high-end guys that wanted the same position, but I don't think Patrick Laine and Blake Wheeler saw it. I don't think Patrick Laine and Blake Wheeler saw eye to eye as well. And I think there was a little bit of turbulence with that relationship on top of it. So, I mean, that could be true where there were some issues between those guys and maybe others in the locker room as well. But I don't necessarily think it's fair to just blame one part. Like I think everyone is kind of to blame here. It's not just one thing. Could Patrick Laine have maybe worked harder and presented a more intense professional, I guess, experience? I guess, yeah, maybe he could have. Could Wheeler and Scheifele have been a little more easygoing? Maybe just dialed it back a little bit with Patrick because he's a different guy? Yeah, that I think that would have helped as well. But ultimately, it just, I don't know if the mix was ever going to work. And I do, you know, at times like these, because we know that, especially a guy like Blake Wheeler, who's so intense and maybe stubborn to a point, I wonder if losing a guy like Dustin Byfuglien maybe wouldn't have helped the situation out a little more. You know what I mean? Like, Buff is a guy that loves to keep it light. You know, everything's, it's fun. He provides more of that, you know, fun-loving atmosphere. And I wonder if the Jets maybe couldn't use a little bit of that to balance out some of the more harder edge things that are brought out with that leadership core. But that's neither here nor there. I don't think it's necessarily a toxic place. But we'll see what happens moving forward with the rest of the roster. If the rest of these guys have a problem with what's going on there. Or is it maybe just that some people don't fit in well into certain situations. And Patrick Laine goes out there to Columbus, even with a coach like John Tortorella, he just fits in better. It could be. Like sometimes no one's to blame in these situations where, you know what, I'm just not comfortable here. I don't like the vibe. We see that all the time in various workplaces. So I don't want to, again, with the locker room thing, I don't want to blame one side or the other. I think everybody shoulders a little bit of the brunt of, you know, ultimately the dismissal and the move of a high-end young player. It just really is unfortunate. That's the thing. It just sucks that it couldn't work out here. It sucks that Patrick Laine, you know, couldn't score 50 in a Jets uniform and, you know, doesn't play another 10 years and you see him mold and grow as a young dude into a man. It sucks, but this is it's how life works. It's how pro sports works, and the Jets decided that it's best to just move on, and let's try to make the best of this situation. So let's go into that then, just the straight up Dubois versus Laine discussion, because in my opinion, the trade is I know it's not necessarily true, but I look at this trade as, you know, two individual trades into one bigger one. I do think it was Jack Roslovic for a third, and I do think it was Patrick Laine for Pierre-Luc Dubois. So I saw a lot of the argument around this. A lot of the conversation was, you don't trade a superstar like Patrick Laine for a, I don't know if you want to call him a 1B center, but, you know, not an upper echelon elite centerman in the NHL. So there was a lot of talk that you don't make that move no matter what. And I don't really agree with that at all. I think it's underrating Pierre-Luc Dubois a little bit, and I think maybe overrating Patrick Laine a little bit as well. The reason I say that is I don't want to call Patrick Laine necessarily an empty calorie scorer, but there's no doubt he did most of his damage on the power play. He got better 5-on-5 as the years went along, but that's where the most of Patrick Laine's damage was done. And there's no doubt there were defensive issues. There were play driving issues. There are some definite holes in Patrick Laine's game. And so I mean, maybe the superstar label is tagged on him more so because he just kind of has that aura around him more so than necessarily performance on the ice. But I think it completely undermines what Pierre-Luc Dubois has done in a tough scoring environment in Columbus over the past few years as well. I mean, it's not like the Jets are getting a 26, 27-year-old centerman who's already reached the peak of his powers. You can make the case Pierre-Luc Dubois the same way with Patrick Laine, that he's just starting to enter and get closer and closer to what his peak performance might be like. And that's a great thought for Jets fans that, you know, a centerman at 6'3" that, you know, is just starting to come into his own here, that is a dangerous weapon to have in your top six. And even with Patrick Laine's goal-scoring prowess, you might be shocked to learn that Pierre-Luc Dubois, 5-on-5, actually outscored Patrick Laine over the last three seasons. He outscored him 43-37 and had a 92-76 even strength points edge over Patrick Laine. That number, by the way, was good for 40th in the NHL over that time span. I think he was, you know, right at the top 20 of centermen in the NHL, despite being 20, 21, 22 at the time. Doing so with just 17:43 a night. He's not playing, you know, the 21, 22 minutes that Mark Scheifele is. So this is a really efficient 5-on-5 score. And the fact that it's a bonus that he's down the middle, those dudes are hard to find. So if you're still a little bit upset and wonder, hey, did we get enough in return for Patrick Laine? I think we need to really look at what Pierre-Luc Dubois has done in Columbus over the past couple of years and maybe get a little bit excited about this. I really think he's going to fit in well here. Not to mention the fact that in the playoffs last year, the Cat was absolutely on fire. He was Columbus's best player by a mile, best forward by a mile. I mean, if you're getting that guy moving forward, then things get really, you might not have gotten a 1B center. You might have gotten a 1A center for Patrick Laine. So I'm really high on Pierre-Luc Dubois. I think Jets fans are going to love him. And I guess ultimately to wrap things up on this trade talk, I think both sides won on this deal. It's not like a team has to demonstrably in a big way win this one over another. I think both clubs got what they wanted out of the deal. They had somebody who wasn't happy in their current situation. They flipped them for each other. Columbus way more starved for the quote-unquote superstar, but at least that high-end offensive production guy. The Jets already have a number of those, and they needed, a little bit more depth down the middle. I don't want to necessarily say two-way play, but just they just wanted another great centerman, and that's what they got in Pierre-Luc Dubois. So all in all, I think the deal was a pretty good one for both sides here. I guess, maybe the disappointing part for me is just that Jack Roslovic only fetched a third-round pick. That's a pretty underwhelming return for Jack Roslovic, who, whatever you think of him, to me, he's still a productive third-line player. And the Jets could use another one of those right now, and they're not getting one back. And I don't know if they will for a third-round pick if they try to shop that around and see what they can grab out of somebody else in the NHL. But I think ultimately why the move was made for something less than what you would hope to get, I was thinking maybe a second-round pick. But I can understand if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, the trade's on the table. You have anywhere up to 10 other teams with serious offers, three that probably had very, very competitive offers. Are you going to jeopardize a trade that you like because you want a second-round pick over a third-round pick? You know what I mean? I don't think so. So I understand Kevin Cheveldayoff maybe biting the bullet a little bit and going, it's not what I want, but ultimately am I getting the package that I've been going after? Yeah, so let's make the move and we can just move forward. Two guys that don't want to be here are now gone. We can move forward with the group that we have and we'll see how that works. But I'm pretty high on the move and I think Pierre-Luc Dubois is going to be great here in Winnipeg. Now that, he's here now. He's not going to be on the ice for the team just yet. But I think we should look at what a potential lineup could be now that Pierre-Luc Dubois is here. And I think there's two options that the Jets can go through. I don't even know which one's more likely. Maybe it's the first one here. And the first one would be basically nothing changes. The only change that's made is Pierre-Luc Dubois comes onto the second line. And either he or Paul Stastny would move to the wing. Either way, you would have a trio on the second line of Dubois, Ehlers, Stastny. Both of those guys, by the way, can play out there on the wing. You would then move Andrew Kopp down, back with Adam Lowry and Mason Appleton. And then a fourth line, and I do think, by the way, that if Adam Lowry is going to be the third line center on this team, that I think David Gustafson is going to be the guy down the middle of the fourth line. Nate Thompson's injury is going to give David Gustafson a chance. I don't think Nate Thompson has a whole lot left in the tank, to be honest. But I just don't see why the Jets wouldn't give Gustafson a longer look. And he's looked pretty good in limited time so far this season. So you would have a bottom six of Lowry, Kopp, Appleton, Gus, Harkins, and Trevor Lewis. I mean, you're sacrificing the center depth that you kind of acquired with Dubois in the deal. So that's why I don't necessarily want to go down that route. But there's no doubt. I mean, Dubois, Ehlers, Stastny, that is, I don't like it because you sacrifice a center to move out to the wing, but that line sounds good as hell. So I'm kind of torn a little bit on that one because I want to see those three in action, but I ultimately don't know if that's the best way to optimize this Jets forward core. Now, the other one would be a complete shakeup of everything that the Winnipeg Jets do. So you would have a top line of Scheifele, Ehlers, and Wheeler, the top line that started the season with the team. Then you would go Dubois down the middle on line two with Kyle Connor and Andrew Kopp. a third line of Paul Stastny, Jansen Harkins, and Mason Appleton, and then a fourth line of Adam Lowry down the middle with Trevor Lewis and Matthew Perreault. That is a lineup that is deep as hell, guys. That's what really intrigues me about that. And you can, if you want to swap Ehlers-Cantor, if you want to swap Appleton and Perreault, whatever it is, the main gist of that argument is Scheifele, Dubois, Stastny, Lowry down the middle. I don't know if another team in the NHL 1 through 4 has as good of a lineup at centerman than the Winnipeg Jets would at that point. I really don't. It's something that would be the envy of the entire league. You're sacrificing a little bit out there on the wing, but man, oh man, are you ever good down the middle. And I don't know which way the Jets are going to go, to be honest. I would love to know what you guys think. What's the better forward lineup once Pierre-Luc Dubois makes his debut in about 10 days or so? Would you rather go Scheifele, Dubois, Stastny, Lowry down the middle? Or would you load up that second line and have Dubois, Ehlers, and Stastny and let Adam Lowry keep centering that third line? Which, to be fair to Adam Lowry, he's been really, really good this season. He's been really strong. So I can understand why Paul Maurice might want to keep that line together moving forward. Now, you know, I mentioned kind of the preferred lineup I had there. And we should probably talk about this quickly before we go, and I'll tee up what we have on tap for Friday's show. But we got to talk about what in the world is going on with Scheifele, Connor Wheeler. This is a big problem with the team. And that's why I wonder, that's why maybe more so my concerns about Dubois, Ehlers, Stastny is just that Scheifele, Connor Wheeler are kept together. I don't know if you can play those three anymore. Because as brilliant as they are offensively, and Scheifele and Connor are almost damn near leading the league in scoring right now, they give it right back up the other way. They're just awful defensively. And I don't know if Paul Maurice is going to be able to have those three be anything other than break even, which isn't good enough for the top line. I mean, they're just too skilled to be this bad defensively. And you saw it again in the Edmonton game. And look, I hate continuously harping on this guy for it, but at some point you just need more from Mark Scheifele defensively. I mean, he leaves his guy wide along Yamamoto at the side of the net for an easy tap, and it was a great play by Connor McDavid. But time and time again, we just see Mark Scheifele make mistake after mistake in the defensive zone. Kyle Connor is just not a good defensive winger. That's I think Jets fans are just going to have to live with that fact. He's going to score a crap load of goals, and he's going to be a net positive player, but he's just not going to be a good defensive player. And I think, you know, and this might be as concerning as anything else, is that it looks like Blake Wheeler has lost a pretty big step so far this season. And he started off slow last year, so we can't say, you know, regression is finally hitting the big guy, but there's no doubt he has not been good inside his own zone as well. So I don't know how much longer you can keep running those guys out. Maybe it was just a bad game. We'll see what they do Tuesday night against the Oilers, and then if that line's still together Saturday against Vancouver, what the move is, if that was just an off night for them. But they need more out of Mark Scheifele, and I think at some point it might just come down to it that, you know what, we can't rely on those three as our top line anymore. Either they're line two, and Dubois, Stastny, Ehlers is going to be the first line because you trust them more, or you have to split this up and find a different way to roll with the forward lines moving forward. All right, well, that does it for us here for another episode of Skates and Plates. So we'll look ahead to Friday's episode. What we got on tap for that, we'll break down only one game this week. Jets-Oilers 2.0 on Tuesday night. So we'll break down that one in full. That'll be, you know, one of the main focuses, and we'll do a deep dive into some of the big plays, see if the Jets can bounce back and maybe push back towards first in the North Division. I also want to know Super Bowl game day recipes. What's your go-to? Like, what are the items you absolutely have to have on your game day feast? And let me know your homemade hot sauces. Let's do a little hot sauce recipe swabbing, okay? We'll see if we can come up with the ultimate wing flavor. I got to figure out something. I want to do it a little bit differently. Maybe you guys could help me out. And then on top of that, we're going to talk with some interesting dudes. I don't know if you guys have seen or heard of Cosmos Food Cantina, the Space Cowboys. These guys are out of this world. They are as unique as it gets. You have to tune in. If you like to partake too, you might want to enjoy a substance or two, because these guys are trippy as hell. I'm super jacked to talk to them and find out what's going on with their crazy menu, how they got started. It's going to be a fascinating discussion. So Cosmos is coming up on Friday as well. But that's it for today. Again, guys, thanks so much for listening to Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. Also, don't forget, sign up for DraftKings using promo code THPN. Get ready for the big game. But until Friday, peace.